The floor is yours. First with the video and then the
deal. Thanks a lot.
Yes, thank you. First of all, I would like to introduce myself, and thanks for the warm words. We are very happy to be here. I'm Jörg Gebhardt. I'm working for the FRA. I'm working for the Communication and Awareness Rising Department. I'm a stakeholder expert. And in the last year, since the last year, actually, I'm also part of the LGBT research team. Not in the research as such, but in the stakeholder engagement. So I know what we're talking about, and I'm very happy that we invited here in this setting. I come to my presentation. So what can you actually expect from me today? Don't be afraid, I don't want to bombard you with lots of data. I will focus on key data. The purpose of this meeting is, if I understood it correctly, and it's also from our side, that we would like to discuss with you what we can do on a national level with this huge compilation of data. What is the consequences out of there? And this we would like to discuss with you here, and to also to discuss it with the political level. My presentation is structured in three parts. First of all, I'll give a small introduction in the methodology of the survey, that you know what we're talking about. After that, you have a possibility to address questions about that. Then I will focus about discrimination on employment, and then discrimination in education of LGBT people in Europe, and will always focus on Finland. Directly after these two thematic blocks, you have the possibility to interfere with your comments, with your need of discussion, with your questions. So these are three parts, actually. Oh, I have to speak closer to the microphone. Do you understand what I'm saying? Good, okay. If I'm my voice is too slow, please, or too low, please make you visible. Yes, why education and employment? Well, one of the main findings of our survey is that particularly in these fields, discrimination seems to be very widespread and has to be tackled immediately. That's actually our conclusion. Why we actually conducted such a huge survey, which took us several years to put on rails and conducted it? Well, in 2009, we published our first focused report on homophobia in Europe, and we collected a lot of incidents of homophobia. We collected also the legal framework in different nations, but one of the main conclusions was we cannot pin down the phenomenon because there is a lack of data. We could not say if these incidents of homophobia were representative or not. So what we indicated, what we found out, is that there is a lack of reliable data. And that brought us already in 2009 to the thought, well, we have to elaborate more on this field. We have to collect reliable data, how widespread homophobia is actually in Europe. So there is a concrete policy need, and on this policy need we wanted to respond. There was a direct request from the Commission. You heard Ms. Redding addressing us at the FRA, saying, yes, I want that the FRA is collecting data on homophobia, so responded to this call, and there was also a call from the European Parliament urging us to do this. How we did that? Well, if you can imagine, it is utmost difficult to get reliable data on the grade of homophobia. We don't even know how high the percentage of LGBT people in Europe is. They're just raw estimates, 7-10% of the population. So how do you do that? So carry out quantitative research on the grade of homophobia in Europe is very difficult. So we discussed it in-house, and our conclusion was, what is feasible and which is good for us is to carry out a survey, an open survey. How we designed the survey, we collected strong partners to get a good picture and including the main evident questions in this survey. So we contracted one of the main providers of surveys in the world, Gallup, to set up together with us the survey. We had a really good cooperation with civil society, namely with ILGA Europe and with DGU, so with the main umbrella organizations, but also national level. We had national focal points, and here in Finland we have the representative of this focal point here in this room. Yes, here she is. So she can say more about that. So altogether, we elaborated on this survey. We had also expert meetings, various expert meetings, so we collected some leading research figures in Europe on the field of LGBT, and we had meetings with them to shape further on the questions. It was decided that our survey would be an online tool. We took in consideration that the access of households in Europe to internet is at the moment very high, and in every country very high. So it's an average of 74% of households who have direct access to internet. And this doesn't matter if it is now in Romania, or is it in Portugal, or in Finland. So they're just great in percentage, but the overall percentage is quite high. We addressed all persons describing themselves as LGBT. We followed our experts in-house and also the external experts to make it anonymous. So people who filled in the survey remained anonymous, and they were over 18 years old. So these were the two limits we took. The survey was online between April and July 2012. So in this period, we collected the sample. What did you get out of it? So what we collected, actually. Maybe it's simpler to say what it is not. It is not a representative survey, from reasons I just mentioned. But it is the biggest survey ever conducted on LGBT discrimination, not only in Europe, but worldwide. We never ever had such a big sample of people describing themselves as LGBT, saying something about their perception and their experience in daily life of being LGBT in Europe. So, as I said, we not collected only perception, so questions like, do you feel, do you think? We also collected experiences. So, did you experience in the last 2 years, or in the last year, or in the last 5 years, harassment, violence, and so on? And all this focus in indication for policy needs. So we formulated in each chapter our main findings, recommendations on the national level and on the European level. What is the conclusion from our side, from our point of view, for the different levels? I will focus here in my presentation just on the member states level. Our recommendations on European level you will find online. So who actually responded our call? Well, 93,000 people in Europe. We have a lot variation between the different member states. For example, alone 20,000 people responded in Germany, 13,000 more in Italy. So it's a big variation between member states. But we think this is also has something to say. This is an indication from which countries we got responses, from which less responses. But overall, the response rate also in countries we found as problematic, like for example Slovakia or Romania, we got quite good samples. From this 93,000 people, 50,000 people described themselves as gay men, 70,000 themselves as lesbian women, 8,600 as bisexual women, 6,800 as bisexual men, and 7,500 people indicated themselves as being transgender. These people had the possibility in the survey to further self-identify in subcategories. And the subcategories transgender, transsexual, and queer were the most frequent one responded by these people. Further on, the sample of 93,000 people stands more for an urban population. 69% of the whole sample said they live in cities and urban and suburban environments, 20% in towns, and only 11% live on the countryside. It's a more young population. This is not a surprise given the fact that this is an online survey. So 2/3 of the respondents were younger than 40 years old of age. It also can be assigned to the attitude of different attitudes of different age groups in the society, but that's speculation, and maybe researchers can say something more about that. We also sampled a lot of other data about the sample. You will find them all in the main report online, in the very end of it. And there you find also some information about the household size. So 29% in Europe of these respondents live in single households, and 71% in households with at least two persons. In Finland, the Finnish sample was quite different. Here, 49% lived in single households. So who responded actually in Finland? And then we came to this picture. There are 3,400 people responded in Finland. 1,100 gay men, 820 described themselves as lesbian women, 756 as bisexual women, 190 as bisexual men, and 481 as being transgender. The level of people responded as themselves as transgender is with 14% of the whole sample, more than double as high as on the EU level. And also the ratio between a gay man and lesbian woman is in Finland much more equal than in different other countries on the European level. So this is actually the first part, methodology. So I invite you to address some first question or impressions about this part, the methodology. Yes, please.
Sure. Okay, so I'm not going to use the microphone.
Please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Sarah Kondalin. I'm from TROSEC, which is the independent transgender organization in Finland. And what I'm interested right now, I counted the total sums of people, and I noticed that you didn't count trans people as sexual minorities, even though they have possibly answered as also sexual minorities. I did. And I'm interested in this, where trans people's sexual minority experiences counted out totally. Mm-hmm. Did they not count to the total of sexual minority answers? And this kind of troubles me. I get why that would be done, because they can kind of problematize the percentages. But I'm worried that trans people are not seen as sexual people, but only as gender minorities.
Yes, you're right. We heard this criticism not the first time. And in the beginning of this survey, it was also our worry, how can we integrate these people also as sexual minority? So we sat together with the different umbrella groups, and that actually was our conclusion, that we do it in this way. I'm really sorry that we came to this conclusion, but it's really tricky to integrate transgender people in survey as the category as such. So it would be feasible and would be actually better the next time to do a survey just on transgender people. Mm-hmm. But that's also a question of resources, I have to say. So we were also under political pressure to also integrate these transgender people, and of course there's a policy need to learn more about the needs of this specific group. And this specific group is not that specific, as you know. I mean, there are so many subgroups. It's really, really complicated. I know there's a compromise what we did. It's not the best one, and I apologize for that. Next time, better. But that's actually the conclusions after a long time discussing it with transgender organizations. Mm. But it's good that you highlight. Yes, please.
Could you specify a little bit of the transgender? You mentioned that the most of them were transsexuals and queer.
Yes.
What were the other groups, and particularly the Finnish?
You can see this at the online thing. These were the three main categories indicated, and the fourth category were cross-dressers. And the other categories, I'm not that aware. But you find all this information on our website, on the tool I will demonstrate later on, this data comparison tool. Then you can find directly how many people responded themselves or indicated themselves in the different categories we provided. And these categories we provided were also then the conclusion of a long discussion with transgender self-organizations. Yeah. I hope this is enough. If yes, please.
Just a tiny question. Do you have? Oh, I'm Atma Sarkoski. I work in Normituri.
In Osaka. Okay, I'm on Osaka's game work at Normandy. Just a tiny question about the total amount of gay men and lesbian women in the European Union. It was like 52,000 versus 17,000. Where does that come from, that it's such a big difference?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's just a speculation where this difference comes from. A researcher can say that a little bit more about. Of course, there is there are many speculations about it internally. We don't want to actually to come out with that. So it's more than on researchers to speculate on that. In Finland, you see, the sample was different. It's almost equal in the composition. And I think this reflects a little bit more the reality in the field than our European sample. Indeed, it has definitely something to do with the creative organization. I guess we reached our people, the people who responded in the survey, a lot via some civil society organizations and their networks, but not only. We had also quite success on dating sites and advertising on dating sites, our survey. And these dating sites we advertised, they were more frequently frequented by male gay than by lesbian women. So this has also consequences then on the general size of sample. But it depends on the national level, always, with how the sample is then constituted. Mm-hmm. Some other questions for the methodology, or shall I proceed? Yes, please.
Thank you.
I'm Ayasalo from SETA. Actually, I would like to ask at this stage, because it might be interesting for the audience, the issue of intersex. I mean, because it was also discussed at the initial stage that intersex people should be included, but it was, as far as I remember, also a conscious decision by the FRA to not do that. And I think in the future it will definitely be one point where more data is also needed, so I would just like to address that issue. Thank you.
Yes, indeed. Well, the survey as it is, the design of it, it's like every research is a compromise, and we had a lot of pressure groups designing the survey with us together, the civil society organizations, and indeed it was a conscious decision that the e-group is not included. We thought on the methodology it's too complicated in an already complicated setting. For more organizatorial sites, we decided that. Well, I think you can say more about it. Actually, you were the focal point for Finland about the discussion, and I was not involved in the discussion on why to include the I group or not. But it's just what I can refer from my experience. Maybe you can say more about that.
Well, one of the arguments that was raised was that the numbers, there was speculation that the numbers for intersex respondents would be so low that it would be difficult, even on a European level, to draw conclusions. Of course, that's kind of speculation. But I think the other argument was probably related to the EU mandate on intersex and that intersex has only recently been surfacing in EU contexts, although now there is already like a EU Commission report, at least this one report on trans and intersex issues. So I hope that in the future the IE letter will also be included.
Yes, indeed. I mean, we wanted to have the maximum impact on the policy level, and indeed the IE group is a quite new concept. And LGBT is more known on the policy level, so we focused very much also on our main target group, which is policymakers, not only on the European level but also on the national level. Mm. Some other questions to the methodology? Otherwise, nope. Good. Then discrimination in employment. Before I start, I would like to confront you with some findings or some testimonies we gathered from Finland. to individual voices of experiences was two person here in Finland experience in the daily life, and this set in a little bit the frame. The frame is openness about being LGBT on the work floor, and this is actually the main point. So can I be who I am at the work floor? So this is actually creating the whole setting in which discrimination can grow or not grow. And if we ask people how they feel or how they act at the work floor, then they say to us in our survey on the EU level that 28% says, yes, I'm hiding always my identity at the workplace because I'm afraid of discrimination or negative attitudes. And in Finland, this is 22% of the people responded to our survey saying, yes, I'm always hiding my identity. I'm selectively open, so from time to time, people, customers, clients, or colleagues, I'm sometimes then open. This 49% of our respondents says at the EU level this is the case, and 63% on the Finnish sample. I'm always open at the work floor, so I have no problems to hiding my identity or my orientation at the work floor. This on European level, say 23% of the respondents, but in Finland, only 15%. Setting the frame is also to frame who is actually employed, who is working, who is in paid work. And in the EU level, it's 58% of all respondents are in paid work. In Finland, it's slightly less, it's 54%. This is explainable by the higher number of students. On the European level, 27% of the people responded were students, in Finland, 31%. So this is also something to do with the age category responded mostly to our survey. The unemployment rate, we have here only data on the European level, there's 8% of the people responded that says, yes, I'm unemployed. But when we ask transgender people on the European level, 13% says, yeah, we are unemployed. So here is also a big problem, and directed to transgender people. In every country, the unemployment rate of transgender is much higher than of LGBTs. In Finland, the Finnish data, we have people not working, but on various grounds. These are 16%, but for transgender people, this percentage is much higher. Here it's 28%. If we look to the income, so there is also some sometimes myths that LGBT people are from the upper classes of the income pyramid. This is not the case. In our samples, on the European and Finnish level, the distribution of income among respondents is in line with the overall population. We have here some variation in some member states. This is not the case in Finland, but we have in Bulgaria, Latvia, Malta, and Cyprus, a relatively higher income of respondents of LGBT people than the average population. And in contrast, in Greece, we have a lower income of LGBT people than the average of the population. If you go down to Finland and we ask the people at the workplace, do you feel, or I feel, at my workplace, I feel discriminated in the last 12 months, in the 12 months, then in Finland, 15% says, yes, I felt discriminated during the last 12 months on my workplace. On the European level, it's 20%. If we ask, at my workplace, do you feel, or do you experience general negative attitudes during the last 5 years? Then in Finland, 27% said, yes, always or often I experience a general negative attitude at my workplace. It's in line with the European level, which is 28%. At my workplace, I experienced unequal treatment during the last 5 years. In this question, 23% of the Finnish respondents said, always, often or rarely, I indeed experience unequal treatment. On the European level, this is here in this slide, not very much to see, it's 24%, so it's also in line of the European findings. Well, discrimination can have really ugly sides, and the most ugly side is harassment and violence. This is a little bit out of the frame of employment, but I come back in a moment back to the field of employment. Again, here's a testimony, this time not from Finland but from France, but again, I think it's self-speaking. And this line, I did not complain, it's no use. I will come back later on that, but this is a main conclusion from our survey. It makes no sense to complain. It concerns the vast majority of all victims of discrimination, harassment, and even violence in the European Union and also in Finland. If we ask who experienced actually violence or the threat of violence, then in Finland, 31% of all respondents said, yes, during the last 5 years, I experienced for myself violence or at least the threat of violence. But if we ask from this sample just the transgender, then 40% of these people describing themselves as transgender said, yes, in the last 5 years, I experienced on myself violence or threat of violence. So again here, transgender are a more risk group, more likely risk group than LGBTs, but the percentage of 31% in Finland is much higher than in the European level. We have, of course, to see the overall statistics on the criminal statistics in Finland to bring this in line, but it's an indication which needs a focus also in this discussion today. Nevertheless, 90% of the victims did not complain. Did not complain to the police or did not complain to anybody else because they think it's no use or they feel even discriminated by the police or whatsoever reason. So we asked also for the reasons and we'll find this also back in our compiler of data. If you go more in the Finnish sample, then generally more lesbians and transgenders are found amongst victims than gay men and bisexuals. You find more younger persons in the age group of 18 to 24 years are amongst victims of violence. That is also connected to the overall age sample. You remember two-thirds of the age sample is younger than 40 years old. And another risk group is people without formal education seems to be more likely and more vulnerable to harassment and violence than people with higher education. Then we asked who are actually the perpetrators. And this is also an interesting conclusion, and we come now back also to the work field. Most of the people say, well, we did not know who attacked us or harassed us or whatever did with us. We did not know. But the people who said, yes, we can specify the perpetrators, the main group who did that were teenagers or group of teenagers. In Finland, 70% of the victims said, yeah, this violence went out from teenagers or group of teenagers. This is in line with the EU sample of 21%. Someone else you know, on this question, 13% answered of the victims, yes, that was somebody I personally know who did that to me. On the European level, just 8%. Family or household members is the top three with 11%. On the European level, just 6%. And now we come to employment situation. It was a customer, a client, or a patient. So in a work-related situation, 8% in Finland said of the victims, that was the perpetrator. On the EU level, it was just 4%. Someone from school, from college, from university, at least 4% in Finland said that, and 6% on the European level. And It was a critique at my work. It's a relatively low percentage, but if you consider a colleague at your work as a perpetrator of violence against you because you're LGBT, it says a lot, I would say. On a European level, it's 3% of the victims. And if you look to the gender of these perpetrators, 82% of these perpetrators were male. And this is absolutely in line with the European level, it's 82%. Let's think about that. In Finland, 12% of the perpetrators were female. This is double as high as on EU level. And of course, we have also to look on the reasons why this is the fact in Finland. We have also to look there in the general criminal statistics, but maybe also other reasons have to be highlighted here. I come now to the recommendations on the member state levels. The first recommendation is EU member states should support equality bodies and other national complaint mechanisms in their effort to inform LGBT persons of their mandate and procedures with a view to increasing awareness of discrimination. We come to this good conclusion because only 2% of the victims of violence said that they complained at a quality body or an ombudsman institution, which is very, very, very low. A second recommendation would be that EU member states are encouraged to support trade unions and employees' associations in their efforts to adopt diversity and non-discrimination policy with the focus on LGBT persons. And the third recommendation would be that EU member states should pay special attention to setting up clear procedures and policies meeting the needs of transgender employees, in particular with regard to the right to personal autonomy and privacy, because we found out that the unemployment rate of transgender people is much higher, that the harassment and negative attitude against transgender people on the workforce is much higher than against LGBT people, that also the rate of violence on the workforce against transgender people is higher than LGBT people. So there is an absolute need to improve the situation for transgender people in the work environment. Otherwise, this situation will continue. That's the part for the employment. So I invite you very much now to discuss with me what can we do on the Finnish level now with this few data. You will find much more on our internet. What can we do with that on the Finnish level? And I'm curious to hear, of course. And how can we support you on the national level, the European level, of course? Who wants to say something about that? Or maybe some impression what this figure is saying to you, or what impression it gives to you. Is it maybe confirming your own experience? Is it confirming your own research, maybe? Is I would like to hear. Or are we absolutely outside of the scope of your expectations? That could also be that it's a sample of 3,000 persons. Maybe it's absolutely wrong what we figured out. Maybe there is absolutely no discrimination on the work floor. Yes, please.
So maybe I'll start.
So I would like to hear from their point something, but it doesn't seem that this is the case.
They were invited, though.
Well, that says also something. Please.
My name is Tanja and I'm representing the trade union problem. But I don't know if I had answers for you, unfortunately, but... Yes, it is. I don't know. It's the discrimination of LGBTI people is now discussed with the trade unions and employers' association when we do the new legislation, which we will hear more about today. So this is one chance that we now have to take it up and discuss it. But otherwise, it has not been. There has been some. You could say projects, and it has been at some unions part of the work, but it's not at all unions, unfortunately, yet. So I think, there's a lot of things to do.
If I may ask, in your trade union, is there a policy officer for LGBTs in charge for gender policy?
Yeah.
And another trade unions, as you know, is this the case?
I think so, yes. Mm,
well, that's the first step. And can you a little bit highlight what you do in awareness raising on the workflow, how to create more diversity-friendly workflow in your point of view, what you do? Maybe you can highlight a little bit some projects you're doing.
Yeah, one way is to work with the equality planning and to include transgender people to the equality plan and advise workplaces to do so. That is one concrete thing that can be done. And then now, while we are going to have the new legislation on discrimination at the workplace, so I think that there will be more when we are when we need to do the diversity plans. So there is a possibility to take up the issues of LGBT people in those plans. So that's one way to.
We encourage you as a trade union and also the national human rights institutions to work on this field together. I mean, there's a lot of competences in different organizations, and I think it's needed that these different institutions join forces to move this policy file a little bit further. So you have in the ministries some equality policy offices, you have this national human rights institutions, you have trade unions, other interest groups. Why not to make a joint effort to bring it further and to think about also with their fellow organizations. So I would like to hear from their point something, but it doesn't seem that this is the case.
They were invited though.
Well, that says also something. Please.
My name is Tanja and I am representing the trade union pro. But I don't know if I had answers for you, unfortunately, but yes, it is, I don't know, it's the discrimination of LGBTI people is now discussed with the trade unions and employers association when we do the new legislation, which we will hear more about today. So this is one chance that we now have to take it up and discuss it. But otherwise, it has not been. There has been some you could say projects, and it has been at some unions part of the work. But it's not at all unions, unfortunately. Yet. So I think there is a lot of things to do.
If I may ask, in your trade union, is there a policy officer for LGBTs in charge of gender policy?
Yeah.
And another trade unions, as you know, is this the case?
I think so, yes. Mm,
well, that's the first step. And can you a little bit highlight what you do in awareness raising on the workflow, how to create more diversity-friendly workflow in your point of view, what you do? Maybe you can highlight a little bit some projects you're doing.
Yeah, one way is to work with the equality planning and to include transgender people to the equality plan and advise workplaces to do so. That is one concrete thing that can be done. And then now, while we are going to have the new legislation on discrimination at the workplace, so I think that there will be more when we are when we need to do the diversity plans. So there is a possibility to take up the issues of LGBT people in those plans. So that's one way to.
We encourage you as a trade union and also the national human rights institutions to work on this field together. I mean, there's a lot of competences in different organizations, and I think it's needed that these different institutions join forces to move this policy file a little bit further. So you have in the ministries some equality policy offices, you have this national human rights institutions, you have trade unions, other interest groups. Why not to make a joint effort to bring it further and to think about also with the umbrella organizations representing LGBT people, how together implement meaningful policies into the workplace. That would be a suggestion from our side. That's our comments, maybe. Well, it seems. Ah, please.
Thank you. To comment directly on that, actually, one of the good things that has already been raised from the current ongoing reforms of legislation, anti-discrimination legislation, especially the Women Equality Act, is that actually the central employers' organizations and the central employees' organizations have been positive to set as a TRASEC suggestion to produce some guidelines or some guiding materials together. Of course, we still face the political procedure for actually deciding what the content of these reforms will be, and it's not only fast forward, perhaps, but at least we have this initial yes to the issue of negotiating and agreeing on how to train, what advice to give both to the employers and to the employees and to the representatives of the trade unions in the workplaces.
Great. So other comments? Otherwise it... please.
Yeah, it's been insane negotiations. I talked about, as I hear it, it's been TRASEC's experience that is a lot easier to work with the trade union folk, and the employer organization people are generally of the opinion that taking trans issues into account is kind of awkward and difficult, and could we just sort of not do this now?
What's a little bit our experience as well, employer organizations are reluctant at the moment, not maybe from a lot of ideological point of view. What we heard from employer organizations is that they fear costs. This is actually what they fear, and that's why they're reluctant at the moment. But the argument against that is, if you would like to increase the productivity on the workflow, this investment you have to do in your workflow is minimal against the output, so that's actually the argumentation line. It should be clear. Any other questions, comments, suggestions? Yes, please.
Thanks. You are the guy with Mr. Dan, and also attorney. What comes to raising up the court cases, so it's basically the key issue is that the person one has to be informed about rights, but as well to have trust to authorities, that will say police, prosecution and the court system. And partly of not having these cases as well, that's a major part in my opinion. People might have so much ashamed about, and if you don't trust the authority, then you trust nothing basically. And also, well, in Finland, little bit part might be that people are seeking so much for consensus, they don't dare to raise up the issues, they just don't want to figure it out in the smaller procedure.
Yes, I think it's a good observation. Will or want somebody comment the data on Finland about the violence and As you've seen the victims rate, or the people saying that they were victims of violence during the last 5 years, is substantially higher than on the EU level. And we have researchers here, maybe somebody can say something about that, or some idea about it. If not, then I'll skip it, but if this is the case, would be much welcome. This is not the case. So, well, think about it and, keep it in mind. And then we come to the education, discrimination education. This part I make short. Again, some experiences, this time not from Finland, but from Poland and from Austria. BUC comes actually to the source of discrimination. At most, often need role models and a misinformation campaign in school. People don't feel welcome as LGBT people at school, feel excluded, and this is the source, and that's actually the ground where discrimination can grow. Setting the frame again for discrimination in school, it's the basic thing. Can I be open as I am in the school environment? This is a leading question, actually. Can I be as I am? And if you see the data here, that people asked about their school time, keep in mind that these people are older than 18 years old, so these people reflect upon their school times mostly in the past, so it's a perception most than experience. But nevertheless, in the EU sample, 66% said, I always hide my identity. I never, ever talked about it because I was afraid of negative comments or even harassment. And in Finland, it is 59%. Selectively open, yeah, sometimes I was open towards a friend or some people of trust. In Finland, 38% said that. And in the European level, 30%. I was always open of being myself. In Finland, just 3% said that. 3%. And in the EU average, it's only 4%. So this says a lot about how school environment is nowadays, or at least in the past years. And this is actually the ground where discrimination indeed can grow. Same questions. In education, I felt discriminated by school, university, or college staff during the last 12 months. So this is experience of recently felt discriminations. And in Finland, 13% said, yes, during the last 12 years, I felt discriminated by school or university staff. So by the people who are responsible of educating young people. If you ask further, did you experience rarely, often, or always negative comments at schools? In your school time, so not in the last 5 years or the last 12 years, in your school time, during your school time, then 67% of the Finnish sample says, yes, this was the case during my school time. I felt rarely, often, or even always hit by negative comments or conduct. You find also then the percentage of these categories rarely, often, always also in our survey, so you can split down the percentages if you like to. And I come directly to recommendations because you find much more data on our survey later on. Our recommendation to the member state level, one of the main recommendations is EU member states should ensure that schools provide a safe and supportive environment for LGBT youth free from bullying and exclusion. This includes combating stigmatization and marginalization of LGBT persons and promoting diversity. Competent state agencies such as Equality Bodies, National Human Rights Institution, and Children Ombudsperson should be mandated and encouraged to explore cases of bullying and discrimination at school. We hardly find in other studies any case that ombudsperson or human rights institution or equality bodies had cases of combating stigmatization like bullying or other discrimination at the school floor. In several countries there are case laws, like in Belgium of the Children Ombudsman, maybe also in Finland, but I'm not aware of that. But in many, many other countries, we haven't a single case. A second recommendation, EU member states should ensure that objective information on sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression is part of the school curriculum to encourage a respect and understanding among staff and students, as well as to raise awareness of the problems faced by LGBT persons. These are our recommendations, and you find many more in our survey. You will find much more information on this tool here. We, the first time ever for our, we did a data explorer on our website, and on the hand of this data explorer, you can indeed explore and compare different countries in Europe. So every question we addressed to our in our survey, you can see the results on this tool and compare for yourself. And this is seen here, this tool, that's Survey Data Explorer on our website. And you have a map here, and you can click on the different countries. It doesn't work here, I do not know why, but normally it works, so I use it quite often. And you have also a bar chart. So if you click on that, you will have all member states and the EU level, and you can compare very easily. And you have here different questions, a lot, you see. And you can filter also to, let's say, age, education, working status, partner, transgender subgroups, and so on. So you have here a sophisticated tool for your needs. You can also filter to all, only lesbian, only gay, only bisexual woman, only bisexual man, and only transgender. So this is quite sophisticated, so please use it, especially for research work. If you have a need, if you don't find any data, or if you have questions about the methodology of our survey, don't hesitate to ask us. We come back to you. And we are absolutely willing to give you all the data we collected for your research work or for your policy work. If it's not sufficient what you find here on our survey, please address us. And that's all for the moment, and I'm looking forward to a lively debate now about education. I invite you, please. What is your first impression about what I just presented? I know it's very, very, very short glimpse, but for me it was important to show there is a widespread discrimination on education. Again, transgender people are a more vulnerable group. Transgender people are more vulnerable group than LGBTs. Almost nobody actually dare to say at school, "Yes, I am LGBT or T." Almost nobody. This has to say a lot, and this has also to have consequences in the curricula of the school and also at the training for school teachers. And if you see, if you remember back, who are actually the perpetrators, then 13% of the perpetrators of 13% of people felt discriminated. They felt discriminated by educational staff. I would say this is a scandal, and we have to tackle the scandal, I would say so. But maybe you have other opinions, or different opinions, or the same opinions, and would like to express them, and I would like to encourage you very much to do so. I see a lot of hand raising. Yes, please.
Hello everyone, I'm Anna Pouci from University of Lanceta. As a teacher, or a starting teacher, it's very interesting for me to see these figures, and I find it very important that in schools and in curricula this would be taken into account. One thing I was thinking about, that hiding the openness or hiding identity, why it might be so high, could also be that some LGBT people might not identify themselves very young. So, yeah. For example, this could be one of the cases, but I do think that in the schools, LGBT people are very kind of hiding. They don't exist openly. And by statistics, there should be a lot of LGBT people there. So, and as a teacher, I find it very difficult, because I'm starting my career, to tell about my identity to my employer. I'm very afraid to do so, unfortunately.
And how was your experience then? You said, well, you talked about it, so it was a positive response of that?
No, I haven't talked about my identity.
Oh, you didn't? Oh, sorry, I didn't understand. So you didn't.
I think I couldn't.
Yeah, well, that says a lot, isn't it? So if you speak about integrating topics like LGBTs in a curriculum, if it's not even possible to speak about that in among staff members, that how impossible is it to include it in curriculum? How realistic is it then?
Yeah, it is in the curricula in some subject matters, but it's touched upon very briefly, and of course it depends on the teacher how they do it. I teach languages, so it's not in my subject.
And is it teach anyhow in the education for teachers at university that this is, should be a topic?
In or? My university, no. It wasn't.
No.
Anyway.
So we see a field of action, Alexander.
Yes.
Yeah.
Please.
Yes, I'm Anastasia. Like I said, I'm going to talk later about the learning learning project, but I just wanted to comment on this, that young people maybe may not know about their identity. I don't think it seems to be that important. In our cases, we have talked to so many young students, and they know very well when they break the norms that are in school, the gender norms and the hetero norms. And it comes down to very small details, like how you walk or how you hold the water glass when you drink. And that matter, but that are the key issue, like if you get bullied or not, and that you have to hide. So it's not just about talking about your identity, it's about everything, how you physically are in school, which makes it even more horrible, I think.
Yes, yes, I think I can support this point. I mean, if I remember back from my school time, it was an absolutely hostile environment against LGBT person in total. The whole concept was not known, was a taboo to talk about. So there was no scope to talk about it, to raise it, and it was absolutely connected with stigmatization. So being LGBT or not, I mean, the whole topic was poisoned, and this is actually what disturbs us and disturbs that is going on. I went to school in the 70s, but it seems that it's still a problem.
It's true that we are going to talk about education issues also after the break.
Mm-hmm.
So, if there are questions directed to Europe, they are obviously welcome. But otherwise, we can continue the discussion even after. The
definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one.
My name is Otile Tola. I'm a researcher, but not exactly on education, as Jukka is, who will certainly speak about this later. I was just wondering. You mentioned that you went to school in '70s, such as me too, and we know that it was a very different time than now. And I wonder if you could see a clear difference between younger people and older people answering this question. Because, I mean, if there is not the expected difference that the younger people would have had it easier, then it's really worrying.
Yeah, well, the indications are that it's not much change actually in this time. This is also findings from research I know from Focus on Education. So there's no major shift. So there is a major shift in society and general attitudes, but in school it seems it continues a little bit. Mm-hmm. So this is worrying me. Mm-hmm. And from the answers of our survey, I told you that just a third of the people responded to the survey were older than 40 years old. So the conclusions here are a little bit, are watered by the whole sample. So we can't track much conclusions out of the age sample as such. Mm-hmm. But there is a lot of research focusing on education. I do not know in Finland, but I guess it's also in Finland the case. So look on this research and you will find that not really substantial things change. At least that's the impression what I gained from my experience with research. Yes?
Maybe I could. Maybe I can shortly comment on that, because I think there is might be an explanation in that sense that earlier people were hiding their sexual identity or gender identity, and they were not so much discriminated because nobody knew that there was something wrong with them, like them or pregnant. But nowadays there's more people visible, and it's then easier to find the targets for discrimination and bullying. So I think that's so the better situation brings more space for diversity, and that also can influence bullying from some people, not all, but from some people. So it might increase bullying at the same time when the space is becoming more diverse.
Frankly spoken, I don't think so. Children sense very much everything which is not in the norm, and a norm set by society. Mm-hmm. I think it's a major problem, and society still did not reckon that the norm is to be LGBT. It's seen as still from society as something which is not in the norm, and children hammer on that. They will. If something is defined as not as being in the set norm. But we will see. I mean, if we carry out this survey again in 5 or 10 years, if this is the case, then of course the percentage of people not hiding their identity in school should increase. If this is the case. Mm-hmm. We will see. I hope so.
How about if we now take the comment? If we take the commentators now? And then we can continue the discussion.
Of course, and you are also in charge of the time management.
I see that we are slightly lagging behind, but thank you so much. I think really this is sort of bringing to you such a wealth of information, and like you said, the sort of your database and what you have available there is also quite interesting, and I'm sure especially for researchers, but also for others who are interested in more detailed information, there seems to be a lot of that available. So
yes, and please use
so
it.
Much. Mm. And also for taking up this sort of a Finnish case so clearly, that was very helpful for our purposes. I would like to make sure there's been publication, at least some copies have been maybe distributed at the back of the room, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so if you haven't picked up your copy, you're welcome to do that. But now we go on with the other speakers. So first I would invite Arja Salo from CETA to take the floor, and then after that to Johanna the question.
Hei kaikille, mun puolesta mä oon Aija Salo CETAsta. Mä pidän tämän kommenttipuheenvuoron englanniksi, koska mä puhun myös tässä nimenomaan Jörgille ja perusoikeusvirastolle ja myös EU-politiikasta asioita, mutta keskustelua ja kysymyksiä voi tietenkin esittää myös suomeksi ja etenkin jos sitten ymmärrän, niin kysytään myös sitä. So, my comment will be in English, because I want to be able to discuss also directly with Fra. And for my part, thank you very much for addressing the seminar and for the whole bunch of data that Fra has provided in the form of this survey. You just referred to a potential follow-up in a few years, and I surely hope that at some point the Fra will be able to conduct a follow-up survey. And this survey is, of course, also a good example for countries also outside the European Union, such as the rest of the member states of the Council of Europe also, and generally also here in Finland at national level, I think it would be important to get more data on LGBTI issues from the different spheres of life, and not only with such focused surveys, but also by mainstreaming to different tools, different indicators, statistics, parameters, Gallups, and so on. And I hope that's what we will be seeing more and more in the coming years. So I'm trying to be short and go very soon to my conclusions or the wishes or setup for future actions that this data and others gives basis for, but a few comments before that. And also I put around copies, one each, of the maps and indexes that Johanna Sorta was referring to earlier, ILGA Europe Rainbow Map and Index, and the Transgender Europe Trans Rights Map of Europe, where these are tables where you see a little bit how Finland scores and how the other countries scores, mostly in terms of legislation. So it makes a balance as this cross-survey addresses the experiences of people in their daily life. But we also have the structures, the legislation, and these, of course, interact with each other.
So first, just to comment about the European level and the European aspect of this whole issue. Of course, FRA is a part of the European Union, and this study has been commissioned by the Commissioner. Really, and that's great, and that's what we need. But at the same time, I'm also hoping that this data will actually be used as a base on a European level for strong LGBTI policies. What NGOs and also a big number of EU member states have demanded from the Commission is an LGBTI roadmap, an action plan. I mean, really to plan and state strongly that these are the actions that will be taken in the coming years. And at the moment, it doesn't look so good. We are disappointed with the Commission because 3 weeks ago in The Hague in the Netherlands, when this report, this survey results were released, Commissioner Viviane Reding really disappointed the participants who were expecting some kind of promise from the EU to take further steps. But she let us down, stating that the Commission already does a lot and that the initiative now just lies with the member states. Having said that, of course, it's very important that every country takes measures, and as we have seen from the data presented, Finland also still needs to do a lot. I think there are several developments going on in Finland at the moment. There are a lot of political procedures where LGBTI issues are not really taken into account at all yet, where LGBTI NGOs are not invited at all, where the need has not been seen yet. At the same time, there are also many procedures where we have high hopes and good examples of LGBTI issues being actually raised and mainstreamed. To mention some of them, the Ministry of Education is just about to release a new recommendation about giving new certificates, for instance, university degrees or school diploma or anything to people who have undergone or are undergoing gender reassignment. That's great. The Ministry of Social Affairs and Health has done a very good job in preparing the reform of the Gender Equality Act. The result still remains to be seen in the political process, but we have trust in that process. And the task force for LGBTI issues that Johanna Suopää mentioned earlier within this network of the human rights focal points of the ministries, that's also a good start, and I'm glad that NGOs are invited to be part of that. As a third trend, there are also these political fights, so to say. It's quite clear in the political discussions that LGBTI issues, LGBTI people's human rights are seen as something that can be debated. In the parliament in Finland, often anything that has to do with sexual orientation or gender identity is considered as an issue of consciousness, which means that even sometimes in cases where the government gives a suggestion, then the MPs are allowed to vote not only with their party but according to their consciousness, which is a weird situation when it's about basic rights and human rights and equality. But these trends are of course overlapping each other and discussing with each other, and I hope that also the international pressure, including the data that comes from the EU and from other European and international bodies, it helps us to mainstream LGBTI issues. And then just to stress some actions that I'm hoping to see in the future. I already mentioned an EU action plan, but an action plan for LGBTI issues is also needed on national level for Finland. Generally, I think also for each ministry, preferably, and also on the local level for the local authorities, local municipalities, and the authorities below them, like the schools, the healthcare, most of these services that are relevant for our everyday life, they're actually in the local level, and they should also have these plans. And I really hope that these ongoing reforms of legislation will
will make the authorities realize that these are, it's not only a rule issue, it's also obligations, not only to work against discrimination, but also to actively promote equality. And safety is a very central issue. You raise the numbers that in Finland the numbers of violence and threat of violence are higher than the EU average. That's very alarming. Of course, the figures also on EU level are alarming, but still, I mean, we really have to look at that, like how to mainstream LGBTI and generally also gender norms, the heteronorm, the effects on the experience of safety, and to put this on the agenda of police, victim care. We are right now implementing the EU directive of the services to victims of crimes, and there this issue should definitely also be included, and so forth. And I would like to raise one of the recommendations given by you that was about the mandate of the equality bodies and ombudsmen. In Finland, currently in the reform of the the Anti-Discrimination Act, one of the issues that has been strongly raised by the NGOs is that even though there is a plan to establish a general ombudsman for equality, at the moment it looks like this ombudsman will not get a mandate in work life, and we just heard that employment is one of the most central areas of life where discrimination occurs, and underreporting is really a problem. So people really need like a low threshold someone to contact in order to actually be able to even ask for their rights to be fulfilled. And just as the last issue, even if we are now discussing LGBTI kind of as a bunch, as a group, I think it's very important for all authorities, employers, even NGOs, to also to look at issues of gender identity and gender expression and issues of intersex also separately and specifically, and perhaps do also separate plans, because otherwise it very easily happens that diversity of gender is marginalized even within LGBTI, and the public debate will only be on family rights or even in that field only for same-sex couples and for instance for getting the parental rights of trans people and so forth. So I also I'm hoping that for at some point, as you said, that there would be a need for specific trans reports, if you would perhaps come up with something based on this study or based on further future studies. So thank you.
Thank you. Absolutely in line with all what is said. Thanks a lot for this intervention. There's an absolute need for more research, especially on the field of transgender and also maybe inter. We think about that. Now, of course, it's a big brainstorming in our agency what we do as a next step. So we are in the course of that. We have very limited resources, so we will see if we can allocate our resources on a study focusing only on transgender people or not. We will see that. But our main concern is indeed on European level to bring the agenda forward. We not really openly, but well, that's difficult to express, of course, as a member of the EU. We would like that the Commission, very much that the Commission would come with a roadmap. We can't press in that much further. We expressed our opinion about that many times. We presented these data also on the background to provide the Commission with the data they need to develop a stringent policy. What Ms. Redding actually asked for, we delivered. So it's now on the Commission. From the practical point of view, Ms. Redding is on the end of the term. We are also not that optimistically that she will come directly on the end of her term with something revolutionary, or at least what a political family would see as revolutionary, let's say it like that. But we will see. Mm-hmm. But indeed, a roadmap on European level is needed as much as on national level as well. So, well, if you see EU more than an economical market, but a community of values, then of course these values are absolutely high on the agenda. Citizens in Europe should be treated equally. It doesn't matter how they express themselves or what they are. That's as simple as such, and this has to be defended by the policymakers on European level. That's very, very clear and simple, actually. At least now, quite a few. And indeed, we heard just today on the lunch break that the new ombudsman here in Finland will be in charge of all kinds of discrimination but employment. And yes, that's a reason to be concerned about. There must be one single complaint mechanism, important and strong enough to tackle all grounds of discrimination. And employment is not only for LGBT people a hotspot of discrimination, not only. You refer to EU Midas. We see the same thing on ethnic minorities. So we have a lot to do on the work field. And there's encouragement, also national level, to have strong bodies to tackle discrimination on, especially on labour.
Thank you. Perhaps I could just add that in The Hague, also 12 governments, including Finland, signed a petition for the Commission in order to draft a roadmap. But, well, let's see. Like you say, we haven't had a very conclusive reply so far.
Yeah, and last comment to that. Well, the European Parliament is in very, very strong words for such a roadmap and urging the Commission since longer time to come up with such a roadmap. There were a lot of parliamentarians, not only of the intergroup, present in The Hague, and they expressed their opinion very strongly, I would say. So there is a political will on some part of the political spectrum, and we will see how it will develop. We have also European Parliament elections soon upcoming, so this, of course, will also have implications on the European agenda.
Well, thanks again.